Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is a highly acclaimed leadership and team development consultant who has educated and inspired thousands of individuals to understand one another and work together better. With more than 25 years of experience as a consultant, keynote speaker, and facilitator, and having earned a doctorate and three master's degrees, she has dedicated her professional life to understanding how people work best in groups. She is the author of Trust Repair. It is possible. Proven strategies to help groups get unstuck, and is widely considered one of the foremost authorities on trust repair for teams in the workplace. Her name is Wendy Fraser, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Wendy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Bobby. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh my goodness. It's been so long since we connected too. I mean, I know we used to both be part of Key Leader, and I remember some of those retreats that we had in the middle of nowhere, but it was always fun connecting with you.
It was a treat to be there with people with your caliber and your facilitation skills. And when we would talk about how to approach things, I loved learning. I loved learning how other colleagues approached things. It was a good learning experience for me. And we did have a lot of fun, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And I feel like I learned so much about facilitation by talking to the rest of you, you know, because, and plus we all kind of get geeky with it. So it was kind of fun, you know, but I wanted to talk to you because, you know, you have a book and I know your topic is trust repair. And the first thing I thought of is, why study trust repair? So could you fill us in on that?
I have been an organization development consultant for 20 plus years. And as I got called in to work with different groups, I felt like when I listened to them and I designed some work with them and gave them, well, let's just say Wendy's best stuff, right? That with some groups it would work with, right? When they had trust issues and I helped design certain activities and interventions and work with them over time, it made a difference. And then I felt I gave equal energy to what the needs were in design and offered the same kinds of, well, not, it's not a recipe, but the same kind of energy around helping to develop those other teams on the other side that it didn't work. And I wanted to understand what sets groups apart that can repair trust from those that can't, because it takes, there's a toll at the personal level and at the group level when there's unresolved trust. And I wanted to help them make a difference. And that's what I studied.
Yeah. And I can understand, because I would imagine that could be frustrating, right? You're putting all your energy in and it's like, okay, why does it work sometimes and not others?
Exactly. And I'm a continuous learner. I'm trying to understand and sort through it. And I know there's no two groups that are alike and there's no two trust situations that are alike. And there are some things though, as a consultant, that you might identify in the groups. And when you try certain activities with them to help them to develop or sort through it, you know, again, I was just trying to understand what makes the difference.
Yeah. So what did you find as far as what makes the difference?
So there's a few things. One, what is someone's intention going in? Now, that's actually, it might seem simple to say that, but there are some people who are ready to talk about what has happened. And they're coming in with a sense of, well, even though I might be a little nervous about engaging in it, I'm ready. I'm going to own my part. And that means sometimes I'm going to have to admit that I messed up. And when people went in there with a sense of openness and a sense of intention around, I'm willing to do the work, and it took work, that made a difference. There are others that may say those words, but it may, timing-wise, they may not be ready, right? Maturity-wise, they may not be ready either, because some people's adult development doesn't always match their age and maturity. So they may still be in a sense of, well, it's still about you. And going into, you have to be able to say, there's something I did as well. And the other things I found, it took time. In my study, the average time took 6 to 36 months to repair trust. And I tell you, Bobby, that's been very interesting to talk with people about, because we think that, well, I'll just have somebody come and do a one-day retreat, and we'll just go and talk through it and make things better. And that's not enough. No. So if it's taken a period of time to get to this place, it's going to take a period of time to work through it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think we all want, I call it the sitcom resolution. Like, hey, it could be resolved in 30 minutes, right? It's like, probably not. So my question is, so you said 6 to 36 months. Is that kind of dependent on how long it's been going on, or their severity, or what does that depend on, the timing?
That's a good question. And I don't have enough data around that, other than those that I've worked with and those in my study. You know, they worked at it for a while. Mm. Even though trust can be betrayed between two people or between, you know, within a group, typically, you know, you might have one huge betrayal experience. Okay. And then you can try to work through that. But most of the time in the groups that I'm working with, it's been erosion of trust over time, which is why, because several things contribute to it. And that's the other thing I found what set the groups apart. So those that were able to identify, I would say, the root issues, let's say there were 2 to 3 areas. We didn't treat each other well because we were really unclear about our roles. And then that affected how we got work done. And then people left each other out of communications. And then we treated each other poorly. Well, those kind of all compound. And those are things that don't just happen in one day or one setting. And so it took them. So the work then, what if they were able to identify what areas, if their work to repair it at least touched on all of those areas, and they tried several things, because sometimes things don't always work the way we plan. That helped. That was one of the things that set groups apart, that they had more comprehensive approaches. Those that didn't repair had holes. They only tried, we'll say, like, well, let's just do team building. Well, that's one of the worst. Well, I won't say that way. It doesn't fix things. We have a tendency to think, because that's what we're feeling, is how people are treating each other.
Yep.
They want, so how people treat each other really matters.
Yeah.
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 And working on that.
And I think sometimes we're reaching for the fast Band-Aid.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So the comprehensive effort or approaches, the intention and the time. When you're talking about the intention too, when you said, do they come to the table prepared to like own their part? It makes me think when I was in grad school and we talked about how we co-create experiences, you know, and everything is co-created. Yes. And it's so much nicer though to think that it's just the other person, but there's such power in that. I remember, I don't even know why I'm thinking about this right now, but it was something you were saying. This was years ago. It might've been 2009. My husband and I, we were having Christmas by ourselves, and I don't even know what happened. It was something stupid. And we both got upset. And finally we looked at each other and we said, how are we co-creating this in this moment? And it was actually, I hesitate to say the word magical, but in a way it was, because it took away the blame. It took away the judgment. It was like, and it made both of us pause to say, oh, how am I contributing to this conversation? So that's what that reminded me of. Am I kind of on track?
You're absolutely on track. There's an awareness that you shared right there with you and your husband, and the acknowledgement like, oh, what are we doing? And we're both contributing to it. And we both then have a choice about doing something different about it. And that's why I created a repair model. The first phase is reflect. And that first piece is going inside saying, huh, why is it that what just happened? Why am I bothered by that? You know, I ask people to stop and interview the feelings. Where's that coming from? Why am I frustrated? Or why did that really upset me? And then the next invitation is kind of some systemic thinking. We are quick to think about what you did.
Right?
I remember a time that I felt really vulnerable in a group. And I was quick to think about how others didn't come to my rescue, right? I was putting my energy there and I hadn't thought as much about, well, what was I contributing to it, right?
Yeah.
And then what was happening in the system? That's the third piece. So what am I doing? What are the others doing? And what's the system doing?
Wow. Okay. So now is that part of the repair model, what you're describing right there?
It is. It is. This whole reflect phase, you know, again, when I studied this, I studied this for my doctoral work, but I've since been continuing to work with groups. You know, the reflect phase should take a while. We give ourselves enough time to kind of sort through it. And in that thinking, as I try to get clearer about what I think I contributed, what you contributed, and what was happening, because sometimes there's pressure happening from outside the group or outside the relationship, because this can be applied again at the individual level, the interpersonal. I just think it can be applied in many places, but we've got to think about that. Boy, you're right. I was getting pressure from upper management. We had to meet performance targets. We were less patient with each other. And then we got really snarky with each other. Boy, that it does. And it creates conditions where trust can erode if we're not thinking about what's happening in the system.
Yeah. I love that. I love the reflection mode. I loved how you said interview your feelings. I'm going to be using that one. And when you say what is a system doing? Is that like what you're describing there, like the external pressures, or is that or could it also be like, I'm thinking about in a family where you have the family dynamics of the system? Could it be both of those, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that anything that's happening that's affecting the conditions in which trust is either strengthened or eroded. And so we have a tendency first to think of actions and behaviors of someone else. When you sent that email, or when that person said that at the meeting, or when you didn't come to, you know, bail me out when I was being thrown under the bus, we think about that. We think of specific behaviors and instances. And then we have to think about, well, what did I do to contribute to that? Oh, I wasn't speaking up. Or maybe I was, I don't know, any number of things. But we also have to recognize other things when I say the system, it's like it's pressure outside of that relationship. So there may be things happening within the group that are affecting it. It's things that are generally outside our control.
Yeah.
But affecting how things are happening. And I think that we just have to acknowledge that that's there. Mm-hmm. And when we acknowledge it, you're like, okay, but then how do we sort through this and figure out, well, what do we need to sort through and start to repair? And that's why the next phase in the repair model is understand. And that's not unlike other things that are out there, Bobby. There's always this sense of, let me hear your story. What's impacting you? But here's the part that I found in my work, but it's also backed up by other trust research, that as you're doing it, we have to do a couple of things. People have to be able to get their voice out there. And there's a lot of psychological safety that's wrapped up in that.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to acknowledge. Acknowledge is is huge. You can actually watch somebody, and I have felt it myself, and maybe you have too, when somebody just says, you know, you're right, I didn't say anything when you were kind of being berated. And I recognize that that had an impact on you. So the acknowledgement of that, then you can watch that person go, oh, I mean, you could see it in their body and their breathing. The acknowledgement matters. And we're living in an age where it's like, well, whatever, just deal with it. Talk to the hand.
Or you don't acknowledge it at all.
Right. And the last piece around that is apologize when and where necessary. And there's magic in the apology. You know, it's not just about saying, I'm sorry. It needs three things, according to research. And then I've practiced it. One, acknowledgement is in that. Two, if I've done something that has messed things up, what am I doing to make it right?
Yes.
So there's some things like, because maybe you were counting on me, Bobby, to get you a portion of a report by a certain time and I let you down and didn't get it to you. Then what am I doing in that moment to roll up my sleeves and say, what can I do right now to help you? Right. So what am I doing to make it right? And sometimes the answer is great. You can help me, or no, it's past. And then the third part is, what am I going to do different so that it doesn't happen again. The likelihood then of that apology and the intention around that working goes up when I have those three components. And we can think about times when you don't have those, when someone didn't acknowledge their part, but they're like, okay, what do we do moving forward? It's like, well, you know what? I just really want to hear from you that what happened had an impact.
Yep. Yeah. And the reason I'm laughing, Wendy, is I'm already thinking about how this completely applies, you know, because sometimes hopefully it hasn't happened, but we've probably all had that where we have the conversation and someone apologizes, and I'm putting that in air quotes, but we know they're apologizing to make us go away.
Yeah.
You know, there's no acknowledgement about how it affected. There's no, what am I doing to make it right? And the third thing, really what you said there, and this is just like a big star next to it. What am I going to do differently so it doesn't happen again? Because that's big to me. Because otherwise, it's just a pattern of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and that's, so that's what you're saying goes into a real apology, those three elements.
Yes.
I love that.
And I've watched it in action, and I've watched it when one of those elements or more aren't there, it's not as steady. Now, sometimes apologies can happen, but then if it happens too quickly, then I'm curious whether it's someone's personal style about, oh, I don't want to enter into conflict. Okay, great. Let's move forward. But then it stays unresolved. And that's all part of the issue. I have a client that I've been working with, and they had what I would call trust trauma like 10 years before.
Wow.
And there was a huge break between like a leadership team and their employees of a couple hundred people. And today, you know, none of those leaders are there, but people are still feeling it. And they asked them, come help us move things forward. They just keep like, let's move forward. That's what the new managers wanted. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that you want that. And yet if things are unresolved for people, they're going to stay there until they have that. Now, it may feel weird, but how, you know, you still have to go through you have to hear people's story. You have to acknowledge that pain happened for them. And, you know, what, here's the part that you can apply it then, you know, from past tense to present tense and moving it into the future. You have that, you know, just again, at the apology, acknowledge it, ask them what they learned and say, how can we use that so that it doesn't happen again? And are there things that we can be doing different to strengthen our ability to not have that experience again? So really, and you got to engage people, and it's not just a one quick conversation, because if it's really slowing down processes and people and their ability to buy into where the new managers want to go, then they need to do the work here.
Yeah. And it's not fast work, you know, I would suspect. Something that you said there too, Wendy, it triggered. We often hear people say, well, can't you just forgive and forget? And it's like, to me, when I hear that, it's, can't you just let me off the hook? it didn't happen, you know, because I think if we're really doing these three stages that you're talking about, it's such a sincere level of, I am truly sorry. I want to make this better now. And I want to make it better in the future. I don't want to do this again. I don't want to make this mistake again. And then you also said something there, and I tried to write it down. I don't know if I got it right, but something like, if things are unresolved, they're going to stay stuck there.
They will. They'll continue to occupy what I call, you know, your head and your heart, right? It's continuing to occupy that space. And if people keep spinning on it, if they keep experiencing it, then we need to help. They need some resolution around that.
Yeah.
And sometimes things, here's the thing, I there will be times when you don't get the chance to have a conversation with someone that you really would have liked to resolve. Yeah. But there are strategies that people and organizations can go through, and you can still say, what did we learn from that? And what do we need to do different moving forward? You can still have that part of the equation in that conversation. And then people at some point have to go through their own process of perhaps letting go. It's interesting. I offer this actually in the fourth stage of the repair model, which is the fourth and last, which is the evolve. Because sometimes people reach that stage and we are still a little bit nervous going, you know, so-and-so let me down before. And I know we've done all this work, but I'm still kind of looking to see when they might do it again. And I invite them to really check in on that. Don't play the gotcha game, right? Don't wait for them to let you down and say, see, I knew it. I gotcha. I knew you wouldn't be able to play. Because for some of us, these are some lifelong behaviors that we're working on. And if we move forward with a little grace and understanding, and there will be setbacks, But if you talk about how you want to handle that, that'll work. But if you continuously wait for someone to let you down, there's some more work to be done, perhaps with that person. But you know, this isn't going to fix everything. But I just want to say that these are some of the caveats. These are some of the things that I have found that play into it. And it's just getting people to think about it. There will be setbacks. So how do you want to handle that moving forward?
And so the evolve stage, that's number four. Mm-hmm. And that is that like moving forward?
It is. Yeah. So just to kind of talk through the pieces, you know, the first is reflect, right? And reflect had that two pieces, one, my inner work, because sometimes there are things that trigger me. That's really only about me.
That's right.
Right. You know, like, okay, I don't need to repair.
I know that button.
We do. And then I got to think about what's at stake. And actually in the reflect phase, I got to kind of do my own little cost benefit analysis, right? Even though I don't say you have to do that big work, but I have to ask myself, what is it costing me to stay in the current state? And, you know, and for me personally, if I'm having sometimes unresolved health, really unresolved issues, causes health problems, physical health, mental health, emotional health. It also causes costs to occur with organizations. Unresolved trust issues affect how work gets done. So our customers may not be happy. It affects morale and it can lead to other risks in HR and legal and other kinds of things. So we got to ask ourselves, is the current state leaving things unresolved, you know, helping us or hindering us? And do we have the capacity to move forward and take as long as you need, but answer that question. And then you move into the understand phase, which is really just about pulling things out, trying to understand what happened, acknowledge, apologize. But during this phase, I'm listening to say, you know, what might be at play with this group is they're not clear about their purpose and who's supposed to do what. So I might think about, okay, maybe this team needs a team charter, or maybe we need clearer decision-making authority with people's positions. I mean, maybe the group needs to understand how different personality styles work through things. So I am listening to what might be at play. And then the third phase is about repair. And that is taking what we learned in the understand phase and doing something with it. Right? Nice. When we talk about doing something different, this is that phase. What are we going to do different? Wow. Let's get more organized. Let's make sure we're all on the same page. Let's spend some time learning together. And that could be some learning experiences. They could learn a personality instrument together, and you could learn a way to communicate when things get tough together. I mean, there's so many things out there for that, but that's most people want to start there. They want to just start giving remedies and band-aids to things without doing the reflection or the understand work before moving straight into let's fix it.
Yeah. Why do you think that is, that they want to jump to the fix?
Because here's my both research and my experience, because what we feel the most is how people are communicating with each other and how they're treating each other. So I want that fixed first. So I go straight to that. And we don't recognize that there are more structural issues typically at play in the erosion of trust, which are things that, you know, clarification of why this group exists, clarification of roles, mutual expectations, are people honoring agreements? How are we getting our work done? Those are what I called structural issues. And that was one of the findings in my study, that those had more of a play and more of an impact and contributed to the conditions when trust eroded than people realized. So when people come in and say, please, people just aren't getting along here. It's not working so well. Let's do some team building, which is why they want to go with what they feel the most, but that's not where we need to start.
Right. That makes perfect sense. When you were talking there, I had a bunch of thoughts going through my head. It's okay. It almost seems like the structural issues could explain why I imagine you could have people come together who maybe have the best of intentions and maybe they really want to work on it, but these other things are interferences or barriers. Is that kind of right?
Exactly.
Wow. That'd be frustrating.
It is for some. So for example, I was talking with someone this morning, a leader, and we just got through doing the initial assessment with her management team. And some of the things that are really frustrating them is they keep begging for, we want role clarification and we want to know decision-making authority because things have changed because of the pandemic. They're realizing is that we're going to do some work, but there's going to be some things that we will be able to help them get clear about. But they have to recognize there are things happening outside their authority from the larger organization that is going to affect them moving forward about what their decision-making authority is and is not in certain areas. And it frustrates them because they want it all clear and they want to be able to do what they can. So we're going to have to do our work in iterations. So we recognize that this is at play and we got to recognize, well, what is it that you can get clearer about with each other? And so we're designing a process around that. And then we're also going to create a list. Here are the things that are still unresolved. But because these are conditions outside the group being affected by the larger organization, we have to kind of have a little bit of limbo, but we still want to have some criteria and a process and how to do that. We're just acknowledging we can't fix all of it yet, but let's do what we can. And that is empowering and that's going to help the group.
Yeah. And it sounds like a little bit, you know, that, what was it, Stephen Covey that talked about the circle of control versus circle of concern? You know, what do we have control over? And starting there, because I mean, I work with managers all the time and sometimes we get so hijacked by all the stuff and there's nothing we can do. Like it's completely out of our control. And yet when we focus on what is in our control, it is way more empowering, you know? Yeah. Interesting. So you said earlier the toll that trust erosion causes. Can you dive into that a little bit more?
I can. And this was something that was really powerful to talk with people about over the years. You know, I think you feel when there's unresolved trust, let's say with between maybe another important relationship, maybe an important relationship at work, and it starts to cause me stress. Boy, I have to see that person at this next staff meeting and my stomach starts to get tight and I'm overthinking perhaps what I'm going to say and where I'm going to sit and all of that, right? And I might be overthinking what they say or what they don't say. So it's affecting, it might be, and I might start to give myself headaches, right? So physically, I'm starting to feel something. It affects how I get work done. Because if I'm worried about talking with somebody, then maybe I'll just assume and I don't have to go talk to them. So it's going to affect my communication patterns. And that's going to affect maybe, you know, the outcomes and my performance metrics. You know, maybe I'm not hitting all of those metrics all the time because we have blips in the relationships. So it affects work. It affects my relationship. It affects me physically. So those are some of those unresolved trust issues that cost something. And now I'm not saying absolutely every infraction has to be talked through, right? But I think we know if there's something repeating enough or there's something that I'm starting to really feel that I need to do something about. And the same thing in groups or organizations. There are patterns like, boy, you can tell this one group is really struggling and their performance is wonky. You know, sometimes they're just not meeting the targets. People are using, and there's other indicators, right? Sick leave use.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're saying like, where am I going to sit at the meeting? Right. Because it's like, I don't want to sit by that person, you know, and it's funny because when I do workshops, when you see people come in the room, you can see there's some people who are like, I don't want to sit over there. You know, like, I don't want to sit over there with them. And it's like, ooh, I always think, what's going on there? You know, my curiosity naturally goes there. I can see that the toll would be potentially very widespread. Mm-hmm. And just from the standpoint of how we communicate or how we don't communicate, mm-hmm. how we avoid. So the trust repair and everything, I know that you studied it with organizations and teams. Is this something that also like applies individually and in, I'm going to say like personal relationships?
Make me smile because yes, I use this with my neighbor over a tree issue.
Oh, tell me about this.
Oh gosh. My husband thinks that any branch, you know, from their tree over on our side, which legally, you know, he could cut, he went and started he was taken out a tree or two in between the property, but it was on our property, but he cut a couple of her branches. Oh my gosh. She just was really upset.
Yeah.
And so I practiced this with her. I said, you know, doing the work, right? This relationship's important to me. She's my neighbor and we're in a book club together and she's my friend. So, you know, the fact that she felt betrayed that this happened and it scared her. She thought that, you know, by taking these trees out, it makes the trees more vulnerable in between our homes so that when we get pretty violent windstorms where I live. So it made total sense to me. Just kinda wanted to thump my husband and say, what did you do? Yeah. Sometimes things are put in motion, right? And then it's the repair work. So I spent time talking with her, went through it. I know, really wanted to hear her out. And it was really more about fear. And then it was frustration that we didn't talk with her that we were going to do this. So part of the remedy is whenever we're going to do any type of work in our yard, in between where we live, I give her a heads up and I talk about it. That doesn't mean she gets veto power. It just means that she's prepared. She has a chance to ask any questions if there's anything big. So
yeah,
that worked out great.
I love that. And I because that's a very real example, right? We've all had our own version of a tree issue, you know, but I love what you said there, Wendy. So any of the work that gets done between the two houses, it's not like she has veto power. I can also imagine a lot of people being like, well, it's my yard. I'm going to do whatever I want, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know, I guess it's humility on your part or that the desire to have a good relationship that allows you to say, you know, choose a different action.
Mm-hmm. I also think I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. And because I care about her, mm-hmm. there's an impact. Our actions have an impact on someone else. Yeah. And if it's small and simple, I get it. But these were larger, and she really had a legitimate concern about the health of her trees then, and because of where her house is placed and potential windstorms that we have. And that all made sense to me. So if you stop and listen, if we build a little empathy for someone else's experience and we acknowledge that, and still, yeah, we have all the legal right to do what we want to do on our property. I get that. But let's just, you know, put this in an organizational context too, or even volunteer groups, or this is my department. This is my program. I've been running as a volunteer. I don't have to talk with you, but really we don't operate in vacuums. And so you're constantly being affected by others, and we are affecting others. So boy, we better keep some permeable boundaries so that we can check in with each other about that.
Yeah, maybe not draw such a hard line all the time. That's really good. I had another thought that popped into my head there. Now it's gone. But I like that. It was when you were talking about really listening, really acknowledging, really trying to understand. And I think that in the work that I do, it seems like that is everyone places a big value on it. And yet when I say to someone, I was just teaching a class today, and yesterday it was a workshop all this week. And yesterday we were talking about listening. And I said, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think listening is? And, you know, people can say, oh, it's 12. It's a 12 out of 10. And I totally agree. And my next question is, how many great listeners do you know in your personal life? And the group got really quiet because I had them all on Zoom so I could see them all. And they started chatting over. And, you know, the answer was 1, 2. I mean, and that's typical. So it's like, oh, we recognize that this is important. And yet many of us, we don't feel like we've got that great listener in our life. And to me, that just represents a huge gap. And I always say too, but if you ask the average person on the street, are you a good listener? They're going to say, yeah. These are also people like, I'm a good driver. I got a great sense of humor. And it's like, no, you don't. So that makes me wonder why, if we recognize that listening is such a great skill, so valuable, why aren't we better at it?
A powerful question. I wonder if, and I don't have the answer, right? I'm wondering if we really want to share our side so much. I want to justify to you that I had good intentions. So that's part of it. Yep. Part of it is that we just assume we know. That's the other part that makes me interested. In the understand phase, when I'm just inviting people to check in with each other, and sometimes I'm doing mediation for those particular relationships that are most stressed, they make a lot of assumptions. I already know what you're going to say and think and do. Sometimes I don't know what I'm going to do.
So. How can you know?
Right. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I'm continuously reminded about that because we all make assumptions. We do. But
human nature.
Exactly. But if we act on it without asking the question or being curious, really just letting the person talk through their stuff. We're so quick again. And, you know, Covey and others talked about, you know, quick to respond. I'm waiting to respond. I'm listening only with my answer or waiting for maybe a more clever question to ask you back. That's not useful.
No. But I think we're all guilty of the assumptions because it's faster. We think it's faster. We think we know. Speaking of that, I was reading in some of the stuff that you sent over. I don't know if what you called it, like behaviors to avoid or something. And there was one, you said, don't allow I'm just being honest. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, because I think people take that as free rein to be brutal. There's a way to have integrity and to speak your truth and to not leave bodies in the wake. And that takes practice and that takes work and it takes feedback from people to say, I appreciate what you want to say to me, but boy, the way you say it is really hurtful. Yeah.
Right? Kind of gets in the way.
Not all of us are very good at saying that. And when someone takes on that persona, sometimes they start to believe what then, because no one's countering them, whatever I say is right. And it just becomes a very interesting road they go down. And I'm not saying all, but I'm just saying I've seen it a few times enough that it's, and that can be damaging. So we have to create the space. I like what Gandhi talked about, that we got to seek the third truth.
I love that.
You bring your truth and I bring my truth, and together we're creating the third truth. And that's just in one relationship. Now imagine that in a group, or, you know, we have to make space for multiple truths, and that's why we got to listen. And if I assume I already know what's true for you, then I'm not coming at it from a place of curiosity and openness. I'm already judging, or I'm already feeling like I know and I'm acting on it. Everybody needs their voice involved in this part of the process.
Yeah. And it's interesting there. I love Gandhi's third way, because I really think that it's such a powerful thing, because it almost forces us to leave our position, you know, and to seek that third way. And I've heard you say the word now a few times, and it's one of my favorite words, curiosity. And I think that curiosity is just, it's such a powerful way to navigate. Why does that keep coming? Like, why is that so? Because it seems like that's important. And with what you're saying, why do you feel like that's so important?
It helps clearly in the understand phase. And it also helps, it helps in all the phases. When people come at this from that sense of curiosity, I am willing to let something new in. And being the person on the other end, when someone is asking these questions and they're curious about my take on something, my experience, what it felt like, you know, what I'm thinking, I feel validated. I feel like I matter, and that you've given me an opportunity for my voice to be considered in this conversation or the process. And that is powerful. You need that. Those that do not, and that's why I have to slow people down. This is the part that really helps groups in this repair process the most. And this is where you get those shifts like, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right. And so you want to create the space for that. And you do that by helping people. And I think of my mentor who constantly reminded us that, you know, how do you know that?
Such
have you had
questions.
The conversation? And so we talk about sound and current data. We often operate on old data. Well, I had that experience once. I tried to talk to that person and they didn't have time for me. And so I project that now into every time I have a conversation with someone, like, I already know what she's going to say, or I don't know what he or they are going to do. Huh, really? That's interesting. Maybe you should try again. So we operate sometimes on old data. And then what is sound data? You know, it makes me crazy when I hear people say, well, all the people in this country, like, really, I don't know. I wasn't asked. Were you asked?
No. You
can't use the word all the American people, all the people in my city. No. So, and is one data point sound? Well, if I'm running a center where, you know, in that, for that client in that moment or that customer, that sound, what can I do to help them? But if I can say, oh my gosh, everybody is really getting upset by this. It's like, okay, well, what's sound data in that? How many customers? And this is where data comes and helps us. So I think that asking questions and being curious is kind of a lost art.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see a lot more of it. And we can get ourselves out of assumption land if we do that, and people feel better. And then we can really, it's a great skill. Like, well, I don't know. Let's go check it out. Let's go ask questions.
Yeah. And I love how you put it. We can get ourselves out of assumption land, because boy, do we get stuck in there sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things about curiosity that I just remember so much from grad school, and I don't remember what professor said it, but it was that you can't feel curiosity and judgment at the same time.
I like that. I'm using that.
Because it's so powerful. And when I teach managers how to coach, because that's a big piece of what I do, they're like, wow, I never feel like you're judging. I'm like, I'm not, because I'm curious. I mean, and when you can truly make that shift, I just think it just opens people up. Because here's the thing, if you're talking to someone and they can feel that you're judging them, are they going to be open? No. We know when we're being judged. So yeah. And there was one other thing I wanted to ask you too. What about, because it seems like trust repair is it's not a solo sport. You know, What if one party won't come to the table? Have you ever had that happen?
I have. And I've experienced too. Sometimes you realize like you've let someone down and you've had an experience and you'd like to make it right. And so maybe you've reached out to them a few times and you're not getting anything. So one, put the invitation out there, because I think that's part one. And if they don't accept that, you can also offer, do you want a neutral third party? Do we need Switzerland somewhere for us? That's another part.
Yeah.
And you just can't make a difference there. Remember, we always have choices. So there are ways to do some of your own inner work. Even though I don't have the other person, I can still do my own work around what do I think might have happened, what contributed to it, what do I need to learn from this. So I always believe there's inner work. But you can write a letter and never send it. I mean, there's some process work that you could do to help you at least feel like you've done what you could, and then let that go. So there are processes, like I said, that might support that. The other part is, if I keep trying to repair work and if it's still affecting the way I bring myself to work and how I show up or to this relationship, you can make different choices, to the point where, I can stay and experience everything at status quo, or at the other end of the continuum, I can make a choice to leave, or I can have some hybrid and different choices in between. Maybe for a while, I guess, work around that person. I mean, there's a number of things, and it's not ideal, but you want, if we remind ourselves, you always have a choice. I think that's pretty.
I think the fact that we have choices is very, very empowering, and maybe just the acknowledging of we don't control whether they come to the table.
Right.
If you ever do find yourself in that situation. So, wow, that's, and I loved what you're saying about the writing the letter. There's so much power in not sending it. There's so much power in that for so many different reasons. One of my favorite books, and I'm sure you've probably read it because it came out years ago, Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin, the Abraham Lincoln, in his cabinet. One of his things that Lincoln would do is he would feel great frustration with people at times, and he would write a letter to them, and he'd say, I'm not sending the letter. I'm going to let it sit in my drawer for a month or 2 weeks. And then he'd take it back out, he'd read it, and then he would decide, okay, is this something I really want to send? And by and large, it wasn't, but it allowed him to process it and get the emotions out. And I thought, that's brilliant. I mean, that's what it does when we write those. Now, we shouldn't always send them. Hit the send button. There it is, Wendy. We live way up in the middle of nowhere, right? So our little Ace Hardware, when you're checking out, some of the point of sale stuff, there's these little cocktail napkins. And I'm always tempted to get these. But there's one that's this woman, she's holding a glass of wine. And it said, after a glass of wine, the send button just looks really big. And I think, oh my goodness, don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. Yeah.
That's classic.
It is. This has been great. I so appreciate you coming on. This is so valuable. How can people learn more about what you do? How can they get in touch with you? All that kind of stuff. And tell us about your book. Tell us about your book first. I totally forgot. I got so caught up.
Well, that's good. Well, and I appreciate you asking. Well, people can get a hold of me through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. It's Wendy Fraser. And because there was already a Wendy Fraser out there, I did Wendy Fraser PhD. And that's me. You can find me on my website, which is my name together, WendyFraserConsulting.com. I'm happy to, respond to email or, to a phone call and talk through things with people if they have an interest. But I wrote the book so that it would be something that anybody could pick up. It could be a person that has an issue with a neighbor that they want to figure
tree
out.
Issue.
Exactly. Or a supervisor who may not have, more than just the ability to kind of buy some books and kind of do some self-learning and application. And I wrote it so that you could also use this work. So the team doesn't have to be in dire straits. It doesn't have to be in a deficit situation, that you can actually pick it up and use it. So it's written so that I share the model, and then I have packed it with tools. I'm pretty practical. I love a good theory, but I want to make sure that people can use it. So I've written it so that if they wanted to apply it at the individual or the group level, I kind of give some instructions around that. And I give about 12 to 15 tools throughout the book that they could use at different phases of the process and ways to make teams and groups and relationships better. And I hope that people get a chance to use that. That's my greatest hope and gift I hope to give the world.
Nice. And the name of the book is?
Trust Repair. It is possible.
Nice.
And I capitalized is. I want people to know it is possible.
It is possible. Don't give up on this, you know, and we'll put links to all that kind of stuff in the show notes. Yeah. And I hope people do check out the book because, I mean, this is a topic that I think is very, very relevant. And I think it's very important. And plus a lot of what we talked about here, I think it can be applied in communication, you know, just maybe avoiding some of the issues in the first place. So, well, Wendy, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I'm glad we got to reconnect. And thanks for sharing your wisdom and insight with us.
Bobby, thanks for asking. And it's just lovely to spend time with you. Thanks again.
All right. I hope that you found that conversation packed with useful tools and strategies that you can use right away. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, what makes a real and sincere and effective apology? I loved the three components that Wendy talked about. One, acknowledge the hurt and how we may have contributed. Two, think about and communicate, what am I going to do to make it right? And three, what am I going to do differently so that it won't happen again in the future? I think that's incredibly powerful, those three steps. Number two, if things are unresolved, we will probably stay stuck because it is hard to move forward. And I think that this is so important. I know that sometimes it might seem easier to skip over it, but it doesn't go away. It stays buried there. I also believe that this takes some courage. You know, it can seem tough to put something on the table that feels uncomfortable. But to me, it's the only way that we can truly change things in the future. And three, the awesome, awesome power of curiosity. Back in grad school, when I heard that we cannot feel both curiosity and judgment at the same time, I wrote that down and I underlined it. And because I'm geeky enough to have colored markers with me, I probably underlined it in red. And if I had a highlighter, I probably highlighted it as well. I just think it's so important. We can feel when someone is being curious and when someone is being judgmental. And I promise I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here with this one, but it seems like this is something that I do well. At the very least, it is one of the most common things that clients say about me when I'm facilitating or coaching, you know, that they feel safe sharing with me because they don't feel judged. And I'm thrilled and honored to get that feedback. I don't want people to feel judged. I don't know about you, but I hate it when I feel judged, especially when I know that the other person doesn't understand me. I think if we could navigate with more curiosity, and to use Wendy's words, which I loved, move out of assumption land, we would vastly improve our relationships. I also really loved what Wendy shared from her mentor. How do you know that to be true? And are you using old data? And are you using sound data? What a great way to check ourselves. So I just want to say a sincere thank you to all of you who have tuned in and who listen, who have subscribed, and who have shared this podcast. It means the world to us. And our sincerest hope is that the podcast is making a difference in your life, even if it's just a small difference. And remember, keep choosing to thrive.